HBO Films presents, in association with BBC Films, a scot-free production. A film by Richard Loncrane, starring Albert Finney as Winston Churchill and Vanessa Redgrave as Clemmie Churchill. A Rolls-Royce trundles through the gloom of an autumnal forest at the onset of dawn. Its headlights are on. The Gathering Storm. The car leaves the forest and continues on through wooded parkland as daylight encroaches. Also starring Jim Broadbent as Desmond Morton, Linus Roach as Rafe Wigram, Lena Headey as Ava Wigram, Tom Wilkinson as Sir Robert Vansittart, Derek Jacobi as Stanley Baldwin, Ronnie Barker as David Inches, Celia Imrie as Violet Pearman, Hugh Bonneville as Ivo Pettifer, Gottfried John as Friedrich von Schroeder, Anthony Brophy as Brendan Bracken, Edward Hardwick as Mr. Wood and Joanne McCallum as Marjorie. The car continues on past an old oak, its leaves golden brown, casting by Irene Lamb. Co-producer Sue Berger, music by Howard Goodall, edited by Jim Clark. Production design by Luciana Arrighi. Director of Photography, Peter Hannon, BSc. Co-executive producers Lisa Elsie and Tracy Scofield. Produced by Frank Dolger and David M. Thompson. Executive producers Ridley Scott, Tony Scott, Julie Payne. Story by Larry Remen and Hugh Whitemore. Screenplay by Hugh Whitemore. Directed by Richard Loncrane. The Rolls-Royce slows as it approaches a line of oaks. The butler, a man dressed in a long dark coat and bowler hat, gets out of the car with the chauffeur. The chauffeur opens the rear door and out steps the portly figure of Winston Churchill. He holds a cane in one hand, a trademark cigar is clenched in his teeth. A young, clean-shaven man climbs out of the rear door. The butler produces a wooden fold-up chair from the car. He unfolds it and sets it down next to the car. The chauffeur unfolds a small table, and he places it in front of the chair. Churchill climbs slowly up a grassy slope using his cane to support him. He makes for a solitary oak in the distance. The clean-shaven man looks on. Churchill reaches the top of the incline, and he stares out over an arable landscape. Clouds gather over the verdant fields. As Churchill looks on, the field melts away to reveal pluming smoke. A battle scene. Men in red coats stand in rows, bayoneted rifles in their hands. They topple like dominoes under enemy fire. A soldier's hat is blown off his head. A man with long wavy grey hair sits astride a white horse looking on. Soldiers fall into the mud. A blast propels a drummer from his horse. The drum shatters under the force of the impact. The grey-haired man remains on his horse. He turns towards Churchill and stares at him. Churchill's face creases into a faint smile. The grey-haired man looks on impassively. Churchill's room. Churchill struggles to sit up, a black eye cover over his upper face. The view from under the bed. Clothes are strewn on the floor. A shirt adorns a nearby chair. Churchill sits on the edge of the bed and drops the eye cover to the floor. He plods to the bathroom, exposing the back of his naked body. He urinates.
Mr. Speaker, will the 30s go down as the decade which witnessed the destruction and downfall of the British Empire? That witnessed the wanton self-destruction of the British Empire. If India were granted self-government, it would mark the downfall of the British Empire. It will mark and consummate the downfall of the British Empire.
Chartwell, 1934. Dogs chase after each other towards the house. In the kitchen, a full English breakfast is being arranged on a tray. The housekeeper lifts her head at the sound of a buzzer.
Mr. Inches, you're wanted.
On my way.
Inches, the butler, slugs a medicinal whiskey before taking the tray off the maid. He rearranges the lid on the breakfast. A young woman's room. The young woman in floral clothes powders her nose in front of a mirror adorned with pictures of the famous. An elegant woman hurries down a staircase towards Inches.
Morning, Inches.
Morning, madam.
Better do something about Miss Sarah's gramophone. I don't want to start the day with another family altercation.
No, madam.
Hello, Mummy.
Morning, darling.
In Churchill's room...
Inches, kindly tell my daughter to turn off that bloody gramophone. Trashy music all over the house.
There you go, sir.
She knows I can't stand it. Why does she do it?
Leave it to me, sir, will you?
Have you been drinking?
This time in the morning, sir, certainly not.
If you have, I hope it's your damn whiskey and not mine.
Inches folds up clothes.
What time is Mrs. P coming?
Early afternoon, sir.
Early afternoon? Why not this morning?
Because you told her not to come till after lunch, sir.
Your invention, I did nothing of the sort.
You said you were going to town this morning, sir, so she would not be required until after lunch.
I've changed my mind. I need to redraft this speech. Get her here now.
Yes, sir.
He drops the clothes.
Mrs. Churchill?
Mrs. Lanmere. Good morning, madam. Something the matter? What's wrong?
It's Mr. Monks, madam.
Butcher?
Yes, madam. It seems we haven't paid his bill for several weeks, and he says he'd rather not provide us with any more meat until the account's settled.
Inches! I'll write a cheque and you can send one of the girls to deliver it. Thank you, madam.
Inches! Liver sorts!
The clean-shaven man enters the lounge.
Good morning, sir.
Morning.
Morning.
He ambles around his mother to the table.
Randolph, you look dreadful.
Thank you, Mama.
All this double brandy late last night.
Not in the same league as my beloved Papa.
It's very bad of a young man of your age to drink so much.
Oh, don't start nagging at this time of morning, please. Let me wake up first.
In Churchill's room.
Wait it.
Kingston, have you picked Mr. Monks?
Where, what?
The butcher from Westrum. Have you paid his bills?
My dear Clemmy, I'm trying to save India from Mr. Gandhi and his gang of subversive Hindus, to save British imperial power from a disastrous eclipse and save the Tory party from an act of shame and dishonour.
In other words, you haven't paid the bill.
For God's sake, woman, I can't do everything.
On its journey...
How's she going?
Fine, thank you.
Look lovely. I thought he said after lunch.
He did. He changed his mind.
Oh, I do wish he wouldn't do that. I'd arranged to take the girls into Westrum to buy some shoes. Heaven knows when I'll get another opportunity.
Mr. Churchill?
Ah, Mrs. B at last.
Good morning.
We have much to do and very little time in which to do it.
Inches, please tell Mr. Churchill I've decided to go to town with him. What time will he be leaving?
11:30, madam. On the dot.
We'll revise the speech and go on to the second chapter on the way up to London.
Today?
Anything wrong with that?
No. No, of course not, Mr. Churchill.
And bring my notes for the Battle of Blenheim.
The middle-aged woman scurries out. The elegant woman, Clemmy, reads in the garden.
There you are, Clemmy. Did I keep you waiting?
Not more than usual.
Good morning, Mrs. Churchill.
How are you, Mrs. P?
Well, I think
you're happy as a clam, aren't you, Mrs. P?
Don't you let him boss you about. He's a dreadful boy.
Nonsense. Mrs. P adores me.
Churchill, Clemmy, and the middle-aged woman drive off in the Rolls. Clemmy sits in the back and folds a broadsheet newspaper. Their journey takes them through a leafy lane.
How are you getting on with the Duke of Marlborough?
Very well. Volume 2, Chapter 20, The Battle of Blenheim.
We're already on page 800 and something.
I think the publishers hope for something a little shorter.
Bugger the publishers, this is more than a biography, it's a panegyric, a tribute to my great and illustrious ancestor. Oh, get her, move on, Jenna. Overtake, overtake!
A truck is ahead on the road. The chauffeur accelerates past the truck.
Remember when Randolph and I went off to see the battlefield?
Of course.
Oh, I dreamt about it last night. I could see everything, Clemmy. Enemy being routed, Europe saved from those ravaging hordes. There was Marlborough, riding into history. Our eyes met. I think he smiled at me.
You shouldn't have had so much cheese. Stilton always gives you nightmares.
Parliament, the Rolls-Royce trundles over Westminster Bridge.
Mr. Speaker, the loss of India would mark and consummate the downfall of the British Empire. If we cannot do our duty in India, we shall have shown ourselves unworthy to preserve the vast empire which still centres upon this small island. It is alarming and also nauseating to see Mr. Gandhi, a seditious Middle Temple lawyer, now posing as a fakir of a type well known in the East, striding half naked up the steps of the Viceregal Palace to parley on equal terms with representative of the King Emperor.
Pendant Councils, Private Members' Bill, second reading.
Churchill stands next to a bespectacled man who is waiting to pick up his coat at the Houses of Parliament cloakroom.
What a monstrous speech. You're his friend, Bracken. You should tell Winston to stop making such a fool of himself. It's pathetic. Britain is losing her grip on its imperial affairs. He's trying to stop the rot. Rubbish. Winston's a self-serving opportunist. That's why nobody trusts him. No sense of loyalty. Thanks, Tom. Does this party count for nothing? Is it disloyal to defend something one believes in passionately? He's attacking government policy, which means he's attacking his own damn party. It's about time he towed the line and stopped being such a bloody nuisance.
A man storms off.
Wrong hat, Tom.
An accountant's office.
Mr. Woods, this is appalling.
You must remember that your husband lost a very substantial sum as a result of the Wall Street crash.
We're bankrupt.
Not exactly, but I have made it clear to your husband that economies are necessary.
What did he say?
He promised to cut down to 3 bottles of champagne in the evening.
Clemmy shifts uneasily. She closes the ledger and looks away from white-haired Mr. Woods. A dining hall.
There was a time when people used to rush into the chamber to hear me speak. It's Winston, they cry. Winston's on his feet. Now they hurry away, as if to avoid an embarrassing accident. I'm finished, Brendan.
Nonsense.
A ghost, witnessing my own demise.
Churchill cast his eyes downwards. The fields outside Chartwell, a moustachioed man dressed in a light suit and a trilby walks jauntily towards a river. He holds a cane in his hand. The Chartwell drawing room. The moustachioed man joins the family gathering.
Diana.
Desmond, have you met my husband?
Briefly at the wedding. Good
Desmond.
To see you.
Oh, I'm so glad to see you.
Helen Morton, how's the spying game?
I'm not a spy, Randolph. I'm a civil servant.
Yes.
Where's your father?
I'm afraid he's having a black dog day. We're relying on you to shake him out of it.
He came back from London in a terrible mood, and he's been like that ever since.
In the farmyard, Churchill rests on his cane. He sits on a tractor tow bar watching a black pig eating apples. The moustachioed man, Morton, approaches carrying an envelope.
Winston! Go on, Winston. Lunch in 5 minutes.
Dogs look up to you. Cats look down on you. Pigs treat you as equals.
What is it? India?
Hardly. Partly these.
What about them?
Well, there, Hitler. Made me think. In 35, I was Home Secretary. 37, First Lord of the Admiralty and 50 Chancellor of the Exchequer. Doing pretty well.
Not bad.
Now look at me. No power. No prospect of power. Look at Hitler. Some bugger all, the head of state in 10 years.
Churchill glowers at Morton.
Come and have some lunch.
Not hungry.
Everyone's waiting.
Let them wait.
Come and have a drink at least.
What have you got there?
The envelope.
I'll show you indoors.
You'll cheer me up.
Not exactly. You may be right about Germany.
What do you mean?
Churchill gets to his feet and follows Morton.
What is all this?
It's a report from our air attaché in Berlin. He says the Nazis have in training over 8,000 pilots.
Sounds as if Hitler is creating an air force.
I would say so.
Yes, but the Prime Minister would not. God help us, Desmond. England is lost in a pacifist dream.
People prefer that to the nightmare of war. Bash and Ale and the Somme are all too close for comfort.
People are dreaming, it means they're asleep. Time they bloody woke up.
They make their way through the extensive allotment. Later at a London theatre.
But it wasn't at the time. It wasn't accepted at this
point. Mr. Baldwin?
Prime Minister.
Herr Becker.
My government is very displeased by a number of scurrilous and totally unfounded attacks on the Third Reich that seem to emanate from the office of your ambassador in Berlin.
So, Robert?
Yes, I'll make the appropriate inquiries.
Well, if it's true, we shall take immediate action. I deplore any attempt to create feelings of doubt and suspicion. I am anxious to work closely with Germany under the new order.
Thank you, Mr. Baldwin. Mr. Wickram, perhaps you will let me know the results of these inquiries.
The most recent dispatch from our ambassador reported that Nazi policy is intensely anti-Jewish. Is that scurrilous and totally unfounded?
The Jews have become far too prominent in many aspects of German life. Their influence is disproportionate. Our policies are merely adjusting the balance.
Is that why you built a concentration camp outside Munich?
It's a place of protective custody, Mr. Wickram. And remember, please, it was the British who invented the concentration camp during the Boer War, I believe. We are merely following your good example.
Ralph Wigram, a suave man, looks on in amazement as the diplomat walks off. Outside, Wigram puts on his hat. Morton is nearby.
Jolly good what you said in there. Nothing but bully boys, these damn Nazis.
Well, they get away with it, that's the trouble.
Nobody does anything about it.
That's right, they don't.
Very alarming.
It is.
Desmond Morton.
Ralph Wigram.
Foreign Office, Central Department.
Oh, dear, I'm sorry. Have we met before? I'm terrible at faces.
I'm afraid it's my training, military intelligence. I have a filing cabinet instead of a mine. I'm going to Charing Cross. Can I drop you somewhere?
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much.
The two men climb into the back of a waiting black cab. At Chartwell, Sarah practices tap dancing on the wooden floor in her bedroom. In the room below, Churchill looks up wearily. He is puffing on a cigar and playing cards with Clemmie at a gaming table. Clemmie raises her head upward.
Dish.
Churchill places a card at the bottom of the pile and takes another.
I think she wants to do it professionally.
Annoying people?
No, the stage.
Nonsense. Girls on the stage to marry into a good family. Sarah already belongs to a good family. Ladies do not become chorus girls.
The maid arrives with tea on a trolley.
There's no cake.
Pardon, sir?
You've forgotten the cake.
There isn't any, sir.
That's what I'm telling you, silly girl.
No, we don't have any cake, Winston. That's what she means.
Don't have any cake? Of course we have cake. Dundee cake from Fortnum's.
Thank you, baby.
Yes, ma'am.
What on earth's going on?
We have to make economies, Winston.
What are you talking about?
I'm worried about money. I went to see Mr. Woods.
Poor Queens. Why?
He's my accountant, as well as yours, Winston.
Could have told you, we could have gone together.
I wanted to see exactly how bad things are.
Couldn't be worse, that's the answer.
We've got the most enormous overdraft.
Well, we're paying it off.
No, we're not.
For God's sake, Clemmie, I'm working day and night. All these articles for the Evening Standard, Marlborough. Not to mention the constituency work.
I know, that's why we have to economise.
It's like depriving me of my Dundee cake.
Churchill chews on his cigar.
You're paying all of Randolph's debts.
Randolph is hopeless with money, we all know that.
Oh, he's irresponsible.
I'll talk to him.
Clemmie taps on the wood around the green baize. Churchill gazes at her from behind his glasses.
It's your turn.
What? It's not.
It is. Come along. You just won the last trick.
Bezique. Double bezique.
Well, score it. Double bezique, 500 points.
Winston, I know how
to
score.
Well, do it.
It's not just Randolph, it's this house, it's Chartwell. That's where all the money goes.
All right, we'll
we
make economy.
We employ 18 people here.
Surely not.
Thrillingly expensive, we should never have bought it.
Oh, don't start that again, please.
You went behind my back.
I did not.
You knew I didn't like it, and you deliberately deceived me.
That's not true.
I never saw such an ugly house.
Churchill fixes her with his gaze, a flicker of anger.
You may find the house ugly, I do not. Anyway, that's beside the point. Come with me.
What for?
I want to show you something.
Don't change the subject.
I'm not. Come with me, please.
Churchill proffers his hand, which Clemmie takes. He leads her onto the veranda, which is decked with plants. Churchill nods, indicating the spectacular view of the countryside.
That's why I bought it. Not because the house is beautiful, but because of that. What you can see from the house. England. Look at it, Clemmie. Nowhere in the world could you find a landscape more ravishing than that. And it's ours. To look at and to cherish for the rest of our lives. I would die for it, Clemmie.
He raises his eyebrows. Clemmie hugs her husband warmly.
Oh, Winston.
Hofer opens the door and Sir Robert gets out.
Great. It's rather unwelcome news, I'm afraid. The Cabinet has decided to sell aircraft engines to the Germans.
I don't believe it.
To be precise, 118 Rolls-Royce PV-12 Merlins.
God almighty.
Designed for civilian use, I'm told, but we both know they can be used for fighter planes.
This is total madness.
Trade should have no boundaries, says the Chancellor of the Exchequer. If we don't sell the Germans' engines, somebody else will. And I suppose there's some sort of logic in that.
What are we doing here, Van? We make recommendations, write briefing notes, nobody listens. Nobody in Downing Street gives a damn.
Well, they're not very interested in uncomfortable things like political reality.
Rafe watches Sir Robert go. A well-to-do London street. A smart woman pulls a high-backed wheelchair with its occupant, a young boy, down a set of stone steps. Then she drags the wheelchair up the entrance steps to a Georgian door.
Surely the Germans aren't allowed to rearm.
Try telling that to Mr. Hitler.
Well, then why doesn't the government do something?
They don't want to provoke another war. Who does? And they feel guilty.
About what?
The Treaty of Versailles. It was far too punitive. Robbed the Germans of their self-esteem.
He's tired out, ma'am. I'm getting him ready for bed.
Thank you, Ethel.
Should we go up? Mr. Baldwin believes a strong Germany will keep Russia in its place. The government regards the communists as a greater threat than the Nazis.
And are they?
I think not. Nazism is more than just a political movement. It's a cult. A religion based on the idea of racial purity. Mankind, the Nazis believe, is divided between the man-gods and the subhumans. Aliens who will be used as beasts of burden or merely disposed of. Those with pure Aryan blood, the man-gods. The beasts are the Jews.
You ready for bed? You ready for bed?
Charlie! Charlie, my boy.
Hello, beautiful boy.
You ready for bed?
Yes.
You ready for bed? Sweet dreams, big man.
Good night, sweetheart.
Good night.
Wigram smiles at the boy, Charlie, in a dining hall. Churchill seats himself in the middle of a long dining table.
What part of Germany are you from, Herr Baron?
Bavaria, some 10 miles from Munich. Do you know it?
I was there last year with my family.
On holiday?
No, researching for my book on the Duke of Marlborough.
Having a look at the battlefields.
How very exciting.
Mm. One has to visit the actual places, tread the terrain, as it were.
We nearly had tea with Hitler.
In Munich?
Mm. At the Ambassador's Hotel.
The Regina Hotel. The ambassadors in Vienna.
Please don't interrupt me when I'm trying to interrupt you.
Herr Schroeder, have you ever seen Herr Hitler?
I've met him.
Really? When was this?
Quite recently. I was having dinner with friends. Hitler was a principal guest.
What's he like?
My first impression, insignificance. Utterly insignificant. A grey face, slate grey. Melancholy jet black eyes, like Grayson's. A figure out of a ghost story. He talked on and on endlessly. Out of Parsifal, he said, I shall make a religion. His oily hair fell into his face when he ranted. Then, quite suddenly, he left. He bowed to me like a waiter who has just received a fair tip. When he left, nobody moved. Nobody spoke. We all sat in silence. Rather like this.
He and Clemmy exchange looks in Churchill's room.
After the Great War, we were told that Germany would be a democracy with parliamentary institutions. All this has been swept away. What do you have? Dictatorship. The most grim dictatorship. You have the persecution of the Jews, you have militarism, and appeals to every form of fighting spirit.
Baldwin won't like that. He sincerely believes that Hitler does not want war.
Baldwin.
Not just Baldwin, many others.
Well, they're wrong.
You think so? I think so. But don't underestimate him, Winston. They admire Hitler. Genuinely, they won't like it.
Well, they can lump it.
In the House of Commons...
Order! You have dictatorship. It's grim dictatorship. You have the persecution of the Jews. You have militarism and appeals to every form of fighting spirit.
Germany wants peace.
We have steadily marched backwards since the Great War.
We've had enough bloodshed.
Here's a greater. Rivalries are sharper. Military plans are more closely concerted, and because of our disarmament, Britain is weaker.
Order! Order! The right honourable gentleman must be heard.
The war mentality is springing up again. Britain's hour of weakness is Europe's hour of danger.
Clemmy watches.
Mr. Pettifer.
Mr. Speaker, although one is loath to criticise anyone in the evening of his days, nothing can excuse the Right Honourable Member for Epping for having permeated his entire speech with the atmosphere that Germany is arming for war.
Mr. Speaker.
May I remind the Right Honourable Member that a poll conducted by the League of Nations found that over 90% of the British people favour international disarmament.
Hear, hear.
And let us not forget that a child born on the day the Great War ended is now just old enough to die in the next Great War. It is our duty, Mr. Speaker, to ensure that there is no next Great War. This country wants peace.
At Chartwell.
People say, Winston won't mind. He's used to being shouted at. But they're wrong. It hurts deeply. Especially from your own party.
The Tories don't want to be made to think. What you're saying is right. That's what matters.
They don't listen, that's what matters. They're banging your head against a brick wall. One can't go on forever. Most men of my age are retired. Do a bit of gardening, enjoy a spot of golf. Enjoy a few years of quietude.
And die.
All those dreams of standing shoulder to shoulder with Marlborough and all the other heroes is stupid nonsense.
If you give up now, then you'll never know.
Give up? Give up what? There's nothing to give up.
You're depressed. Black dog's barking.
Well, perhaps he's barking the truth.
Churchill brings a painting down the stairs. He examines others that are stacked up. Clemmy picks up her jacket before turning to Churchill.
Winston, do you remember last year when Inches fell ill?
What?
It wasn't the flu, it was something more serious.
Why didn't you tell me?
Because he told me not to. The doctor said he should give up work completely, but he refused. Mr. Churchill needs me, he said.
And it's not just inches, it's Mrs. P, the staff, your constituency workers, me. We're all the same. You have the ability to make people carry on no matter what.
You're only trying to cheer me up. Well, don't.
Winston, all these years I've put up with the miseries of political life because I believe in you. And somehow I survived. But to have you here all the time in retirement, bad-tempered, getting in everybody's way, that is something I just could not survive.
Churchill chuckles and gives her a knowing look. Later in the garden, Churchill is bricklaying.
Mm. You're getting pretty good at this, Winston.
90 brick an hour. Isn't that right, Harry?
Nearer to 60, I should say, sir.
Oh, very well, very well. Between 60 and 90. And I've become a member of the Amalgamated Union of Building Workers.
Fully paid up.
Very good.
This material you're feeding me about the German Air Force, it's too generalized. Facts and figures, that's what I need.
Not easy. That stuff doesn't come in my direction.
So how do I get hold of it?
To be honest, I don't think you can. Top secret, eyes only. Go straight to the Foreign Office.
Oh, see what you can do. I got thrashed again in the house last week. I need some muscle, Desmond. I need to fight back.
In Sir Robert's study.
Come in.
Ah, Rafe, I thought you left ages ago.
Well, I've been reading this. Drink?
Yes.
It's a report from Berlin. Hitler's cabinet has approved a new law. It means, in effect, the compulsory sterilization of all those suffering from hereditary illnesses which are deemed, and I quote, to affect the health of the nation.
Bad.
Racial purity, this is just the beginning.
A word with the Prime Minister.
Much good that'll do. He'll just say it's German domestic policy and has nothing to do with us.
Which is true. In all honesty, Rafe, there's very little I can do, if anything. You, on the other hand, may think otherwise.
Sir Robert hands the report back to Wigram. They exchange a look, then Sir Robert turns away. In the government offices...
Have you brought any of this to the attention of the government?
I've tried. I've sent briefing notes to Mr. Baldwin and all members of the cabinet.
Have you had any reaction?
Nobody pays any attention. Hitler's war machine's getting more powerful every day, and the British public's being deliberately misinformed. Or at least deliberately kept in the dark. I've made a summary of the figures issued by the government comparing our military strength with that of Germany. On the next page are my own figures, which are much nearer the truth. Germany will soon be strong enough to wage an aggressive war, which is what I believe they intend to do.
Your figures are very precise. Much more so than the information I have. Presumably you have access to other reports, other statistics. All of it is as precise and detailed as this.
Far more detailed. As I say, this is only a summary.
Well, I don't see how I can help you.
Well, your position...
I may be called director of the Industrial Intelligence Center, but don't be fooled. I'm no more than a civil servant. I have no public voice, which is what you need.
Yes, it is.
In that case, I think you should talk to Winston.
Winston? Churchill? Surely he's...
Past it?
Well, I don't trust him. First he joins the Tory party, and then he switches to the Liberals, and now he's back with the Tories again. He has no judgment.
Maybe. He has an extraordinary instinct. He knows when something's important and should be pursued. He's wrong about India, of course. He's been wrong about a lot of things. I believe he's right about Germany. I shall be seeing him at the weekend. If you'd like me to take anything down to Chartwell, I shall be happy to do so.
That would mean... You're suggesting that I remove secret documents from a government office and show them to someone who has no right to see them. It's a criminal act.
But perhaps a necessary one.
Wigram's eyes open wide. Wigram enters his office.
Marjorie?
Yes, Mr. Wigram?
An envelope. I need a large envelope.
An envelope?
Yes, do we have any large envelopes?
How large?
Just to take some papers, just an ordinary large-size envelope.
Oh, if you give the papers to me, I'll post them for you. What's the address?
No, it's nothing to do with work. Where do we keep the envelopes?
Marjorie hands him an envelope.
Is this big enough for you?
Fine, perfect. Thank you.
Marjorie in a brown cardigan fixes him with a bemused stare. Wigram closes his office door behind him and rests his head against it. He slides a key into the lock of a wooden filing cabinet and opens the drawer. A multitude of brown folders, all neatly labelled, are stacked inside. Wigram flicks his way through them and pulls out a folder marked with a red cross and the words "Most Secret." Wigram walks slowly down marble steps into a Roman bath-style swimming hole. He surveys the swimmers around him. In the changing rooms, Morton takes a towel from a table. Wigram is waiting. He hands Morton the file.
They must be back in the office first thing Monday morning, so I need them back by Sunday evening at the latest.
You have my word.
If it says, don't walk on the grass, I never do. Never used to. Sunday evening, then.
Sunday evening.
Morton dries himself and studies Wigram as Wigram departs. At the Chartwell tennis court...
Definitely.
Can we have some more lemonade?
No, let's finish the set first.
Churchill sits reading Wigram's file.
Where did you get this?
Cab in the Foreign Office. Rafe Wigram, head of the Central Department.
Risky business, pinching this.
Useful?
This'll make the buggers jump.
Indoors, Wigram looks at the clock.
11:30. Who the hell is he? Morton promised.
Well, perhaps you should telephone.
Telephone who? Don't they know how important this is?
Wigram goes to the door. He opens it and sees the bespectacled man, Bracken, walking away.
Hello? Mr. Wigram?
Yes,
Brendan Bracken. Just returning that. Sorry I'm late. Car broke down. Bloody nuisance. There's a note in there from Winston. He'd love to have you come down for Sunday lunch. He'll be in touch. Good night.
Good night.
Wigram clutches the file. At the House of Commons...
Mr. Churchill!
Mr. Speaker, before I am derided yet again, and before any further insults are hurled at me in the evening of my days...
It's nearly midnight, Winston!
Let me give you some facts and figures, some food for thought. Let me describe to you the method of aircraft manufacture in Hitler's Germany.
Sit down, Winston. We've heard it all before.
This you will not have heard. I can assure you of that. Aeroplanes destined for the Luftwaffe are not manufactured in one place. Throughout Germany, a large number of firms are making seemingly innocent component parts, which are then dispatched to great central factories where they are assembled very rapidly into fighter and bomber aircraft, like a jigsaw puzzle or Meccano game. It's very clever, very effective, and above all, it conceals the true scale of German rearmament. I am reliably informed that the working population of Dessau, a small town near Leipzig, increased last year by 13,000 people. And why was that? What is manufactured in Dessau that requires such an enormous influx of workers? Lager beer? Lederhosen? Sausages? Aircraft? That is why I say we must act decisively, and we must act now, to put our defenses in order. If we do not, history will cast its verdict with those terrible, chilling words, too late.
Baldwin glares at Churchill.
Mr. Ferguson?
The Right Honourable Gentleman, the member for Epping has...
Clemmie and Ava walk the dogs.
Charlie would so love a dog.
Oh, I'm sure we could find you one.
Off you go. I'm afraid our garden's too small. It's the size of a postage stamp.
Well, we have an absolute menagerie here. Winston has cats, dogs, geese, donkeys, wild swans, pigs, not to mention the children.
Don't know how you manage.
I've written my own epitaph. Here lies a woman who was always tired,
But she lived in a world where too much was required.
Are landscapes your speciality?
On a whole, yes. Less troublesome than portraits. A tree can't tell me that I haven't done it justice.
Don't know how you find time for painting.
Oh, I couldn't do without it. It keeps me sane. I mean it. This couldn't exist without paints and brushes. The black dog will get me. Are you a warrior?
Yes, I'm afraid I am.
Well, then you should definitely take up painting. It's good for the spirit, calms the nerves. What do you worry about?
Almost everything, really. Mm-hmm. My wife, my son. Are they happy? Will they be all right? State of my finances, state of the world, state of my roof.
Your what?
My roof. We have a leaky roof. Every time it rains, it's a nightmare. But most of all, I'm worried about these papers, these documents I'm showing you. If anyone were to find out, I'd be in the most terrible trouble.
Nobody would find out. Don't worry, Rafe. It's all strictly confidential. May I call you Rafe if it's not too sudden?
Please do.
The recognizing and acknowledging of fear is a mark of wisdom. For example, I can't stand too near the edge of a platform when an express train is passing through. A second's action would end everything forever. My doctor says it's a form of melancholia. We call it my black dog. Painting drives it away, as does bricklaying. I'm building a wall. It goes well with writing. 2,000 words, 200 bricks a day. What's the time? I feel peckish.
It's nearly 4 o'clock.
I knew it. Time for tea. When we have visitors, we have Dundee cake. Yes, it's a great treat these days. I'm particularly fond of Dundee cake. Come on, Rafe. I'll take these. You bring the easel. My old man said, follow the bell and daily dally. Oh, come on, don't try and fold it up. It's a bloody nightmare. And dilly-dally on the way.
I hear you went to Chartwell.
Yes.
Did you have fun?
Yes, yes, we did, rather.
I didn't know you were chummy with Winston.
Well, I'm not. Not chummy.
I wonder what he wants you for.
What do you mean?
Winston's circle friends are all people who are useful to him. The idea of having a friend simply because you like someone has no place in Winston's world. You have to be very careful.
What of?
He demands total loyalty. Thou shalt have no other gods for me. Do you know what Lloyd George said of him? He said he would make a drum of his own mother's skin in order to sound his own praises.
Sir Robert saunters away. At Chartwell, Mary, riding on horseback, snatches an apple from a tree.
Walk on.
In the breakfast room.
Who's this article for?
The Daily Mail.
Churchill hands Clemmy a page from a letter.
Damn good at the Daily Mail. Big fee, big readership, what more could a fellow ask?
Clemmy smiles, then looks over at Churchill.
Walter Guinness telephoned this morning.
How is he?
He's very well. He's asked me to go on a cruise.
Cruise? Very nice.
More of an expedition, really.
Fine. You'll enjoy a little rest. Where's Walter planning to go? South of France?
Komodo.
Komodo? Where the hell's that?
Just below the Philippines, near Bali.
Philippines is halfway around the bloody world. What on earth makes him want to go there?
Something to do with catching dragons.
Dragons?
Well, they're more lizards, really, but they're very big. And they're for the zoo.
Wait a minute. Walter Guinness is seriously suggesting going halfway down the world searching for some damn lizard. Is that right?
Well, yes.
You must be mad. What's the point of it?
Well, it would be a great adventure.
You'd be away weeks, months.
About 4 months.
What is going on this trip?
Evelyn, of course. Two of their cousins. A man called Terence Phillip.
Who's he?
Art dealer. We met him at one of Walter's dinner parties.
Clemmy, you have 4 children who require your love and support, not to mention a husband who has to work 20 hours a day to keep this household afloat. And you think it's all right, do you, to leave us to go off chasing lizards with Walter Guinness?
What am I supposed to say to that?
Well, don't you think it just might be construed as just a little selfish? Well, don't you? Huh?
Winston, do not accuse me of being selfish. Do not dare! I spent the last 26 years of my life trying to please you, and I've done everything, and I mean everything. I put your happiness before the children's happiness, before my happiness. You're the most sensitive man I've ever met. So!
Clemmy storms off.
Don't accuse me of being selfish, Winston. Don't you dare!
Sorry, sir. I thought somebody...
Churchill points at smashed crockery and scattered food on the floor. The maid gives an embarrassed nod. She kneels to clean it up.
The sprout misbehaved.
Yes, sir.
The maid picks up the broken crockery. Churchill scrutinises the entrance to the room before getting up and following Clemmy out. He trots up the stairs and makes for Clemmy's room.
Mrs. Pussycat, Mr. Pug is very sorry. Pussycat, do let me in. Mr. Pug is very lonely out here. Mrs. Pussycat, please.
Clemmy smiles and guides Churchill into her room. Later at the railway station, Clemmy is aboard a train.
Open the window!
My darling!
Open the window!
I can't hear
That's
you!
That's why I opened my phone from the window. The lights
are up. We've got to have a show!
We are shouting!
I'm looking for the dragon!
Pull up and let us trap!
Churchill watches the train go with tears in his eyes. On the train, Clemmy leans back in her seat. Her face flickers with a look of sadness. The train chugs away into the darkness of the night.
And how are you this morning, sir?
All right, I think. Thank you for asking. Missing her, of course, but that's to be expected. Yeah. Upon in dwelling on her absence, we must KBO.
Yes, sir. Keep buggering on at all times, sir.
KBO. That's the order of the day.
Inches folds Churchill's clothes. In the bath, Churchill dictates his speech to the middle-aged woman who sits behind the door.
We are entering a period of danger and of anxiety. Come up. Let us stop and see exactly. No. Stop that. Oh, bugger.
She throws the soap back.
Thank you kindly. We're entering upon a period of danger and of anxiety.
You're repeating yourself?
Well, all right. Don't break your heart about it. And how do we stand in this long period of danger? Pause for emphasis. Look of doom and foreboding. There is no doubt that the Germans are superior to us in the air at the present time. And it is my belief that by the end of the year, they will possibly be 3 or even 4 times our strength.
Baldwin turns to view the other MPs.
Well,
on earth did he get all that information?
Winston makes it his business to be well informed.
But I don't like it. It could do immense damage to our trade with Germany. Not to mention the cost of rearmament. I mean, where does he think the money's coming from? I want him isolated. Tell the whips.
Only a short distance away, there dwells a nation of nearly 70 millions who are taught from childhood to think of war and conquest as a glorious exercise, comma, and death in battle as man's noblest fate. Stop.
Mr. Churchill.
Oh, I beg your pardon, Mrs. B.
To urge preparation of defense is not to assert the imminence of war. On the contrary, if war was imminent...
Wigram unlocks a barred room and enters. There are row upon row of cabinets inside. He fiddles with the keys nervously. An assistant appears pushing a trolley loaded with files.
I'm sorry, Mr. Wigram.
It's all right.
London is the greatest target in the world.
Wigram watches her leave.
Valuable cow tied up to attract the beast of prey.
He unlocks a cabinet. Later on the London streets, he studies a broadsheet pensively.
Papers, get your papers here.
This is all a bit Agatha Christie, wouldn't you say?
Wigram scowls at Morton before handing him the newspaper and walking off. Morton extracts a brown envelope and tosses the paper away. At Chartwell...
Here is Clemmy. Thank you for your letter. I'm delighted you had such an exciting time in Madras. Stop. Mr. Philip sounds the most agreeable and adventurous companion. Stop. I've decided to make the peninsula on the bottom lake into an island, thus providing a safe haven for the geese. Their heavy work will be done by a great mechanical digger, which does the work of 10 men and will therefore please the accountant. As you will have heard, Randolph was heavily defeated in the by-election and lost his deposit. This resulted, of course, a setback for him and should teach him prudence.
Randolph stands inside an open-top Rolls microphone in hand.
Is in your hands. If I achieve anything, they will say it's because of you.
Rubbish.
And when I fail, they say, oh, what a tragedy for the old man.
For God's sake, Randolph.
I'm not a child, Papa. I'm 23. I want to make a life of my own.
All right, do what you like. Make a fool of yourself. I don't give a damn.
Go to hell, Papa. I'm not staying in this bloody house a moment longer. Bugger!
Randolph knocks into the trolley, sending it flying. The maid hurries in.
Sprouts again, sir.
Cauliflower.
At the theatre, the curtain goes up on a musical show.
Keep young and beautiful. It's your duty to be beautiful.
Mary and I went to see the show that Sarah has got herself involved in. Didn't care for it at all. And a patch on Gilbert and Sullivan.
Sarah tap dances in a chorus line of scantily clad girls. A man in a top hat and tail sings on a raised platform.
With this wretched man she keeps talking about, Vic Oliver, the so-called star of the show.
If you want to be loved, if you're wise, exercise all the fat off. Take it off, off for here, off for there. When you're seen anywhere with your hat off, have a Marcel waving your hair.
Can't imagine what she sees in him. Common as debt. Diana, I know, has written to you about her intended divorce. A sad business, but probably all for the best.
At Chartwell, the maid picks up a smashed photograph.
I dealt with the situation very clumsily, I'm afraid. I wish profoundly that you'd been there to offer comfort and advice.
It's getting deeper in, Richard!
The accountant has been sadly disappointed. Downpours of rain occurred, and the mechanical digger sank into the mud and finally wallowed himself into an awful pit.
No good. Hopeless.
98 degrees, sir.
Very good, inches. Full steam ahead.
Yes, sir. Very good, sir.
Inches runs above. Churchill wallows in the water.
In a jacket tonight, isn't she?
Yes, sir. The looser trousers, sir.
I'm afraid so. Round of six.
Very good.
He stares into space. Later in his study, Churchill flicks through a pile of stamped and addressed envelopes.
Good morning, Mr. Churchill.
Your dear letters are the only bright spot in my life, Clemmy. I fill my days writing inflammatory articles about Germany and thus incurring the wrath of Stanley Baldwin, which pleases me no end.
Oh, it is an Evening Standard. Have you seen it?
Well, yes.
Yes, I don't seem to have had much luck as far as Winston is concerned. He's more voluble than ever.
Germany is his new hobby horse. He won't let go of it.
Oh, you've got to make him.
What? 10:30.
Yes. Yes, I will not allow him to interfere with government policy, nor indeed with the smooth running of the party machine.
I'll do what I can.
Have a word with someone in his constituency.
Yes, of course. A word about what exactly?
Well, there must be a large amount of local party members who were dismayed, not to say alarmed, by Winston's behaviour. Encourage them to speak up. Tell them to make him aware of their displeasure. Say he's erratic, totally unreliable.
Baldwin snatches a newspaper from Pettifer. At the theatre, a group of elegantly dressed people climb the marbled stairway towards the bar. Sir Robert turns and spots Rafe Wigram in the throng of people.
Rafe!
Hello, man. Enjoying it?
Oh, very much. You?
Oh, immensely.
Winston's been very active recently.
Active?
Oh, yeah, endless speeches, all those newspaper articles, Evening Standard, Daily Mail, everywhere you look. Created a lot of anxiety.
Yes, yes, I'm sure.
Not surprising, really.
No.
His information is remarkably detailed. People are starting to wonder where it comes from. Of course, a lot of it could come from your department.
Yes, yes, it could, I know.
Winston started to make some real impact. Slowly but surely, attitudes are changing. It would be unfortunate if something were to go wrong.
Wrong?
Yes, one has to be very careful. No unnecessary risks, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Here we are.
Hello. There you are, my darling.
Rafe Wigram forces a smile which fades into a look of anxiety at an underground station. A car pulls up. Rafe Wigram, still in theatre dress, climbs out and enters a public telephone box. He dials and searches for change. Violet types up Churchill's dictations at Chartwell.
We must defend our island from foreign aggression. Stop.
You're clear.
We should repudiate all defeatism and pacifism. Stop.
Back there.
West Room 93. It's for you, sir, Mr. Wigram.
Our country can only be safe if it is strong. Rafe, how are you?
Winston. I can't go on with this. I'm sure they know something. We have to stop this now.
Listen, Rafe, just a little longer.
Winston, are you sure we're not making matters worse?
I don't believe we are. It's so very important what you're doing, Rafe. You mustn't stop now. Rafe KBO, remember our motto, keep buggering on.
Wigram, tension in his face, shakily replaces the receiver. Ava studies him in concern. Wigram glances at her, then turns his head away. Churchill rides his horse in the woods, accompanied by his daughter Mary.
Life is drab without you, Clemmy. If it weren't for Mary, I'd be utterly miserable.
Now, I just want to show you the scale, the distance. There's the south of England where we live, and there is Austria, where you went last Christmas with Mummy. Yes, and you remember how far away that was?
Yes.
Now I'm going to show you where Mummy is now. Let her go!
Away. Your desert island picnic with Mr. Philip sounds idyllic. I wish I could have been there with you.
Through the Suez Canal.
It is over 11 weeks since you left Chartwell. And I'm counting the seconds until you return.
To Komodo, where the dragons are.
It really is long way.
It is, yes.
Paragraph. Diane has gone back to her husband, comma. But I fear the marriage will not last. Stop. Inches out. I'm in the middle of a letter.
Telephone, sir.
Out.
The man says it's important,
sir. Call back later.
Really important.
Who is it?
Major Sankey, sir.
Who the hell is Major Sankey?
One of your constituency workers. I think you should talk to him.
What, now?
Yes, Mr. Churchill. He's been ringing all morning.
Oh, all right, all right. Inches, you're the most irritating club that ever walked the earth. I was in the middle of a letter to my wife, and now I've completely lost my train of thought. Idiots! Have you no sensitivity whatsoever?
There's no need to be insulting, sir. I was merely passing on a message.
Shut up, Inches. How dare you? Tell the girl to put the call through up here.
She's gone to lunch, sir.
Well, then do it yourself.
I am not acquainted with the mechanism, sir.
Oh. God almighty, bloody hell. You're very rude to me, Inches.
You're very rude to me, sir.
Yes, but I'm a great man.
You're a stupid old bugger.
Inches sits with Violet.
Mr. Churchill's in trouble.
How do you mean?
Mr. Baldwin or someone high up is trying to get him pushed out.
Of what?
The Conservative Party.
Don't be daft, girl. They wouldn't do a thing like that.
They don't like all his speeches about Germany. They want to shut him up.
Well, can they do that, Mrs. B? Just kick him out?
They could, I suppose. Yes. Organise a vote of no confidence, something like that.
They'd never get over it.
I know.
I'll tell you this, Mrs. B. If they do kick him out, I shall never vote Tory again. Never. Not even Liberal.
Bastards! How dare they? Buggers! It is absolutely the worst thing of my whole bloody life! I'm surrounded by enemies. They call me a warmonger because I speak the blunt truth. Baldwin is behind all this. Stanley bloody Baldwin. No better than an epileptic corpse.
Churchill paces the room.
Who is in charge of the clattering train? The axles creak and the couplings strain. The pace is hot and the points are near. And sleep has deadened the driver's ear. And the signals flash through the night in vain. For death is in charge of the clattering train.
Churchill storms out.
He'll be needing a glass of champagne.
Possibly two.
Charlie, Mummy's nearly finished, and I promise we'll go out to the park.
There's someone to see you, ma'am.
Oh, who?
Mr. Pettifer.
Pettifer? To see me? We'll go in a minute, darling.
What are you reading, Charlie?
Pettifer examines a portrait in Wigram's lounge as Ava approaches.
Good afternoon, Miss Pettifer.
Mrs. Wigram.
I'm afraid my husband's not home.
It was you I came to see.
Me? Please, do sit down.
Thank you. I need your help in a rather delicate and confidential matter.
The Prime Minister feels it would be advantageous if your husband did not see quite so much of Mr. Churchill.
What do you mean?
It's perhaps not wise. Not good for him.
Not wise for who?
Your husband.
Well, then shouldn't you be telling this to my husband?
I'm quite sure he takes note of what you say.
What my husband does is his own business. I wouldn't dream of trying to interfere.
No, no, of course not. But do remember, your husband is the head of an important part of the Foreign Office. It's not a good idea for him to tell Mr. Churchill what's going on.
Why? If indeed he has been.
Please, Mrs. Wigram, don't let's argue about this.
Please, Mr. Pettifer, don't treat me like a child.
If your husband persists in seeing Winston, he may find himself being posted somewhere inconveniently distant, which would, of course, be difficult with regard to your son. Difficult for him to travel, I mean. Difficult also, I should imagine, to find the appropriate medical assistance in certain parts of the world. I dare say it would mean you're having to stay here.
You've made a foolish mistake, Mr. Pettifer.
Oh?
A tactical error. When a member of the government comes to my house and threatens me so openly, it only goes to show how extremely important it is that my husband continue his friendship with Mr. Churchill. That is my opinion, anyway.
Ava turns and shows Pettifer the door.
Please give my regards to your husband. Do tell him what I said.
I think I'd prefer not to.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Wigram.
What do you want, Mr. Churchill?
I'm looking for a letter.
What letter?
I thought there might be something from Clemmy.
Not today. It's not easy to post letters in that part of the world.
He ambles off.
Perhaps tomorrow?
Churchill and Moulton are in the wood.
Does the name Terence Philip mean anything to you?
Terence Philip, yes. Art dealer, I think.
Anything known?
Good looking. Rather dashing, plenty of money. His father was rich.
Married?
No.
Lemmy seems to be quite chummy with him. She keeps mentioning him.
Oh, he's on the boat with her.
He is. I'm idiotically jealous.
Oh, Winston.
I'm sure she's in love with him.
Rubbish.
He writes about him in every letter. Terence and I did this, Terence and I did that.
They're just companions, friends on holiday together.
No, Clemmy. I can read between the lines. I know her thoughts.
Don't be ridiculous. She loves you, Winston, very deeply.
I'm a rotten husband.
Nonsense.
I suppose he's the romantic type, you know, all that sort of stuff. Never got much of that from me. We never seemed important, even when I was young. Daisy Fellows, she tried to seduce me at the Ritz. Wasn't interested. Used to think it was because I smoked too much. Tobacco is bad for love. Old age is worse.
You're talking nonsense, Winston.
I've lived too long. I'm in the ruck. I've drunk too deeply of the cup. I cannot spend. I cannot fuck. I'm down and out. I'm buggered up.
Where you get that from?
It's a translation from the Russian, Pushkin, I believe. You may laugh, Desmond Morton, but I think about it all the time. Clemmy and that fella.
She'll be home soon, Winston.
Wrap me up in my tarpaulin jacket and say a poor trooper lies low. Get six stalwart lancers to carry me with steps silent, mournful, and slow.
Churchill throws food to the goldfish in the pond.
Mr. Churchill! Mr. Churchill, sir! Mr. Churchill!
Is your drunk?
She's here, sir. She's here.
What?
Taxi's coming down the drive, sir.
What on earth are you talking about?
Mrs. Churchill, sir.
She's here?
Yes, sir.
She's here! She's here! She's here! She's here! She's here! She's here! Out of my way! Out of my way!
Churchill half runs in glee past an astounded Inches.
It's your wife, Will? Oh, lovely. Thanks so much.
He takes off his hat and, soaked to the skin from his dash through the fish pond, stares as Clemmy gets out of a car.
Why are you all wet?
I thought I'd never see you again.
Clemmy moves closer to Churchill.
Oh, here I am.
Churchill fights back his tears. They embrace and walk off. Churchill puts his arm around Clemmy's waist. She grips Churchill's hand. She greets Inches, who is taking in her suitcase. At her dressing table, an elegantly attired Clemmy powders her arms. Churchill watches.
So you had a good time?
Wonderful.
I missed you very much.
I missed you too.
I'm not sure that I believe that.
Momentarily, she stops powdering her skin. He walks slowly to where she is seated. Churchill sits next to her.
You seem to have seen a lot of Mr. Terence Philip.
Yes.
You like him?
He's good fun.
Good fun?
It's very interesting.
Clemmy powders her neck.
I hear he's much in demand. All the hostesses in London want him at their dinner table.
Oh, yes. I'm sure they do.
She stands and selects some earrings from her bureau.
You should ask him here for the weekend. Did you fall in love with him?
Clemmy stares wistfully out of the bedroom window.
You made me like him.
Clemmy lifts the lace curtains and gazes into the distance. Churchill looks away. Clemmy smiles at her husband.
Oh, Mr. Pug. Your new island looks lovely.
At the cinema.
At Versailles, it was laid down, and at Locarno, it was confirmed that Germany was forbidden to take any armed forces into the Rhineland zone. And for 18 years, the fortresses of Frankfurt, Koblenz, and the other garrison cities on the Rhine have been empty. But gradually, under dictator Hitler, Germany has been asserting her independence of treaty obligations. First, she left the League of Nations, then she set about rebuilding her army, navy, and air force. Until today, when her forces play at war in mimic battle, Germany is seen again to be one of the great armed powers of Europe.
Die Bewegung, sein Lebensausdruck unseres Volkes, damit ein Symbol des Ewigen. Es lebe die nationalsozialistische Bewegung. Es lebe Deutschland!
Wigram stares out of the window. Outside, rain is falling heavily. At Chartwell.
We're powerless. Hitler's preparing to tear the world apart. And we can do nothing.
Of course we can, and we shall.
I should never have shown you those papers.
What do you mean?
Well, perhaps the Prime Minister's right. Perhaps we should try to find a compromise with Herr Hitler.
Well, don't be ridiculous. We know that's impossible.
Then perhaps we should let him have his own way.
For God's sake, Ray, what ridiculous nonsense is this?
Ray, you're tired. We should go home.
Hundreds of thousands of people will die. Millions. And I shall be responsible.
Winks, that's just not true.
Partly responsible, then.
How would you be remotely responsible?
By showing those papers to Winston. By stirring up public opinion. By making it impossible for the government to reach a settlement with the Nazis.
Rave.
Hitler is unstoppable. In 3 years, he's made himself dictator of Germany. He's dumped the Treaty of Versailles and rebuilt the armed forces. He'll march into Austria and then Czechoslovakia and then... God knows what, the whole of Europe.
There may be a war. I grant you that. Nevertheless, we shall win.
How can you say that? It's just mindless optimism.
When I was at school, I had a friend called Merlin Evans. And one day we were talking about what we would do when we were grown up. And I don't know why I said this or why I thought it. But I said, one day in the future, Britain will be in great danger. And it will fall to me to save London and the Empire.
Schoolboy fantasy. I wanted to play for England or climb Everest.
My destiny. And I truly believe it.
You're an extraordinary man, Winston.
I am. I know it.
Nobody but you could say that sort of thing and expect people to believe it.
Destiny is what I believe in. Destiny commands. We must obey.
Wigram turns to the rain-soaked window. Churchill stares gravely at him.
It's a very jolly lunch, I'm afraid.
Look after yourself, Mama.
Take care of Rafe. He needs you so much.
I will. Thank you, Clemmy. Bye.
Ava closes the car door and waves goodbye with her umbrella in her hand. At the House of Commons...
All over Europe, it is the hush of suspense. And in many lands, it is the hush of fear. During these last few years, the world has grown gravely darker. We have steadily disarmed, partly with a sincere desire to give a lead to other countries, and partly through the severe financial pressure of the time. But a change must now be made. We must not continue longer on a course in which we alone are growing weaker, while Germany is growing stronger. Yeah.
Baldwin puts his hand to his forehead. In the men's room...
Prime Minister!
Oh, hello, Winston.
I hear there's a nonsensical rumour that you're about to retire. Please state that
that isn't the case.
Well, I shall be making an official announcement in due course. But please be discreet. I don't want everybody to know.
I'm very surprised. You're much loved in the country, Stanley.
I've had my day. I'm exhausted. You know, some days I'm so tired I can hardly turn over the pages of a book.
We've had our differences. Profound differences. But I've always admired your great political skills.
Winston, let me tell you something. To my mind, war is the greatest folly that can afflict mankind.
No, absolutely, no question about it.
Now, please don't interrupt. Now, maybe you're right about Hitler. Perhaps this war is inevitable. But I believe that I am also right. I have done everything in my power to preserve peace, and I would do exactly the same all over again. Bloodshed, sorrow, irreparable loss. That's what I've been hoping to prevent.
But, as I say, you may well be right.
Churchill and Baldwin face each other tight-lipped. Baldwin walks away, leaving Churchill to ponder as he goes about his ablutions. In Wigram's office... Wigram's desk is cluttered. He lifts a letter and inspects it as his secretary enters.
So many telegrams today.
German troops are on the march. Thousands of them. Hence all the telegrams. Hitler's planning to invade the world, and we're planning to do nothing about it. What do you make of that, Marjorie?
Perhaps
we should go home. What do you think? Or we could take a stroll at St. James's Park. It's remarkable weather we're having for this time of year, and, well, we're hardly much use here, are we?
Wigram touches Marjorie's arm, then releases his hold.
Sorry, Marjorie. It's a poor joke. Thank you for these.
He gestures to the telegrams and picks a few up. Marjorie leaves.
Marjorie, I meant to ask, what time is the defence meeting tomorrow?
I don't think you're required at that meeting, Mr. Wigram. We haven't received any notification.
Not required? Fine. It's funny how word gets around.
Snow falls outside the Wigram house.
Thank you very much. Come on, my little man.
Hello.
Pop. Charlie, it's snowing. How lovely. Ethel, can you manage?
Yes, thank you, ma'am.
We should go and find Daddy in the garden and make a snowman. What do you think? Oh, silly mummy.
Ava, let's go have a balloon.
Silly mummy.
Wigram sits in the dark. He is illuminated only by the glow of the Christmas tree lights and the fire as Ava returns.
Merry Christmas and a happy New Year!
Shall I take it?
Thank you.
Come on, young man. Oh. What you need is a bath.
Good bath.
Be up in a minute.
Ava switches the light on and sees her husband.
Rafe? What's wrong?
Nothing. Drink?
Please.
Wigram concentrates on pouring out a drink. He offers Ava a glass, then chinks his glass against hers. A wry smile passes across his lips. They stare at each other intently and sip their champagne. She gets out of bed and walks over to the window. She pulls back the curtains.
Rafe! Ah, the snow is settled. How wonderful. We must take Charlie to the park. He's never seen snow like this. So beautiful, like a painting. You must telephone to the office. Tell him he won't be in today.
Wigram is lying on the wooden floor in the bathroom on his back. He is still in his pyjamas. His body is rigid and his arms are splayed. He is clearly dead. A cemetery near a gasworks. The congregation makes its way between gravestones and mausoleums.
Poor turnout from Whitehall.
I know. Pretty bloody awful.
We had lunch with him a few days ago, and he was very upset then. I was quite frightened. Do you think...
It says pulmonary hemorrhage on the death certificate. I think we should leave it at that.
The mourners head to their cars. Morton and his wife offer Ava their condolences. Churchill hangs back. Ava, hands clasped, stares back at the graves.
He said it was all pointless, everything he tried to do. Was it pointless?
Churchill shakes his head.
His life was very precious to me. Please tell me it wasn't wasted.
Ava, my dear, you'll be very proud of him. People often act heroically because they don't fully appreciate the dangers that lie ahead. Rafe saw those dangers and was afraid of them. But he did what he did in spite of his fear. No man can be braver than that.
Thank you, Winston.
He holds her hand. Ava walks away. She glances back one last time, then gets into a car. Churchill is painting in the drawing room at Chartwell with his glasses perched on his nose. He adds fine touches. Clemmy is reading a novel. Clemmy stops reading. She leans back in the armchair and closes her eyes. Churchill removes his glasses. Clemmy opens her eyes and looks at Churchill. He has stopped painting and is gazing out of the window with his back to her.
What is it?
Any invading force would march across our little bit of England on their way to London. I wonder how long we've got.
Churchill stands pensively in the bay window.
This is London. You will now hear a statement by the Prime Minister, the Right Honourable Neville Chamberlain.
I am speaking to you from the Cabinet Room at 10 Downing Street. This morning, the British ambassador in Berlin handed the German government a final note stating that unless we heard from them by 11 o'clock, that they were prepared at once to withdraw their troops from Poland, a state of war would exist between us. I have to tell you now that no such undertaking has been received, and that consequently this country is at war with Germany.
The housekeeper clutches Inch's hand. In the lounge, a maid puts tape crosses on the window. Morton walks past.
Up here, Mrs. P. What's the matter?
Telephone, sir. The Prime Minister's office.
Churchill replaces the receiver in its cradle. Morton and Clemmy look on. Churchill stands and faces them. His grave face breaks into a grin.
First Lord of the Admiralty back in power!
Jolly good show.
Churchill's housekeeping staff are gathered.
I've been made a member of the War Cabinet. Mrs. Churchill and I must now make our home in London. Needless to say, we shall return to Chartwell whenever possible. Every one of you will be looked after, neither retained here or found good jobs elsewhere. Mr. Inches has all the details. There may be difficult and painful times ahead, but now that I'm in charge of the Navy, Mr. Hitler and his Nazi thugs had better look out. We're going to teach them a lesson they'll never forget.
A dark-haired maid presents Churchill with a bunch of flowers. Churchill pecks her on the cheek. The maid scurries off in embarrassment. Outside Chartwell, the staff wave Churchill and Clemmy off in their roles. He looks back and watches them.
Mr. Inches? Yes, I think a glass of champagne might be in order.
Well, with respect, sir, I think we might save that for happier days, sir.
Quite right.
However, there is a very good claret, sir, if you might be interested in. It is a very good year. I can't tell you which year, sir.
Churchill's chauffeur crosses Westminster Bridge at night time.
Not to the House of Commons and at the Admiralty. For a navy to run.
The car stops outside the government buildings. Inside the car, Churchill lights up a cigar. Clemmy stares at him.
Just before the Battle of Blenheim, Marlborough said to his aide, "Today, I conquer or die." Now I know how he felt. Thank you.
For what?
For being rash enough to marry me. Foolish enough to stay with me. And loving me in a way I thought I'd never be loved.
Churchill and Clemmy gaze adoringly at each other. Churchill gets out of the Rolls-Royce before taking Clemmy's hand. He turns and smiles at her. Clemmy looks at her husband with admiration. Churchill mounts the stairs that lead to the offices of the Admiralty. Two soldiers stand guard outside the entrance. Inside, an Admiralty officer flicks through a ledger.
Evening.
Good evening, sir.
I'm the new First Lord.
Yes, sir, we know that.
How do you know?
A signal was sent to the fleet this afternoon.
What signal?
Winston is back, sir.
Winston is back. And so he bloody well is.
Churchill raises his cane and cigar triumphantly. A caption, 8 months later, Winston Churchill became Prime Minister of Great Britain. He led his country through the 5 years of the Second World War and celebrated victory in May 1945. In all our long history, we have never seen a greater day than this. Everyone, man or woman, has done their best. Winston Churchill, 8th of May 1945. ITFC audio description.
Thank you.